you've been keeping up with us, we have devoted to two programs, this one a week ago and our Yada Ya Shabbat program following it also last Friday, to a review that I wrote on behalf of what will become Chapter 9 in a book called Observations for Our Time. And what happened was, I have this habit, Kirk, of when something strikes me as interesting, I'm like a dog with a bone. I just won't let it go. And I just really want to, I want not only to know the answer, I want to go beyond opinion. I want to go beyond conjecture. I want to go way beyond beliefs. I want to be able to track down an answer to the point where you can say, I know for certain this is true because it is derived from irrefutable evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not a lot of people. Yeah, well, not all people that way. You were certainly that way. And it is an interesting approach to learning. And it was derived from a passage in Bar Reshith. Now, our listeners know what Bar Reshith is, those who may be new to the program or who do not know Yahweh and his Torah, perhaps do not know they have been fooled by the Greek name Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would ask you, Kirk, just as it relates to that name, mm-hmm. was the Torah written in Greek?
Never.
Was there a single word of the Torah that was scribed in Greek?
Never spoken in it or scribed in it.
Did Yahweh subsequently say Revelation? Say, oh, boy, this Hebrew language is so unpopular. If really I want to come across as enlightened, if I want to reach the world, what I need to do is to give up on Hebrew and I'll write all the prophets and Psalms in Greek.
Nothing is close to Hebrew as being not only a beautiful language, but everything about it is superior to any language ever invented by men.
And so there's no evidence that God ever revealed anything ever in Greek.
Well, you have to think, who is he revealing it through? There were Greeks.
Hebrews. I guess that would be logical. So why do we call the first book of the Torah Genesis by a Greek name?
Because we hate, not us, but because the Western world who preaches Christianity hates everything Yehudim.
But isn't that just a stunning insight as to how corrupt that book that Christians lug around called the Bible actually is? Even the cover of the book,
mm-hmm.
Bible.
Right on it.
The best thing you could say is it's based on a Greek word.
Right.
There's nothing that God spoke. Did Yosha ever speak Greek? Is there a single indication that Yosha, the Christian Jesus, did he ever? Well, I can't say the Christian Jesus, the actual name of the individual. That the Christians have corrupted into Jesus. Yeah. Did he ever speak Greek?
No, sir.
So why would you pick a Greek word to title the book? Bible. It's a transliteration of Biblos. And, of course, it isn't even a Greek word. It's a Egyptian word.
Mm-hmm.
From Biblia, was the sun goddess in the Egyptian religion. She happened to have a town named after her where papyrus was prolific along the Nile. And so when that papyrus was taken to Phoenicia, and grew there, which would be a more convenient place for it because it was a seaport, and therefore they could export. Yeah, easier to export. And papyrus ultimately became desirable because it was woven. Yeah, it was woven into pages that were useful as it relates to writing down books than parchment used to be, than animal skins.
Right.
And so they moved, so they grew this in Phoenicia, and they named that town after the Egyptian town, therefore after the Egyptian goddess, Biblia.
Yeah.
In fact, the town has all sorts of shrines, to our Lord of Biblia. All sorts of them. They're all over the place in this Phoenician town. And so that's how the word was transliterated into Greek, and so it's the name of a pagan goddess, and that's what they put on the cover of their goddamn book.
Now, ask yourself a question. If they have they're so adamant about putting the 10 statements in stone everywhere.
Right.
What's the first statement say? It says that you can't be in both camps at the same time. Don't bring this, one God, be with one God and be with me at the same time.
That is correct. Yeah, the first statement actually identifies God by name.
Yeah.
It says, my name is Yahweh. I was the one who led you out of captivity, away from slavery, in the crucibles of human oppression known as Mitzrayim. You will not exist with any other God in my presence.
Right.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, too, is the second book of this, because we're talking about the lack of credibility of the Christian Bible. The second book, is Exodus a Hebrew word? When you were studying Hebrew and you're looking at the text, did you ever come across the Hebrew word Exodus?
No.
No, as a matter of fact, is there an X in Hebrew?
No.
Do Hebrew words end in us?
No, I don't think so.
No, they don't. And so Exodus is another Greek word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how about you move on, and next one you have is Leviticus. Now, Leviticus is a bastardized child. Is there a B in Hebrew?
No.
So the book was named after the Loi.
Right.
And some idiot transliterated Loi, the W, which is the O sound, it's a vowel, as a V, even though there's no V in Hebrew.
Right.
Well, that didn't make any sense. And oh, by the way, is the central theme of the third book of the Torah these fellows named known as the Loi?
Miss Cara called out.
Yeah, well, that's the name of the book, because the central theme of the book is about the invitations God is offering us, to call out and be called out and meet with him. So we blew that one too, didn't we?
Yeah, not even close.
No. And Numbers, is there a Hebrew word that you could transliterate Numbers?
No. We're all so poor.
Does God throw out a lot of numbers in the book? No, and the next book, the fourth of five in the Torah, is Dabarim. I mean, Bamidbar, in the wilderness, Bamidbar.
Right.
Actually, it's in the place without the word. Yeah, Bamidbar. And then the last book of the Torah, if you were to open your goddamn Bible, you would. And I'm using that term appropriately. I'm not swearing.
Separate.
Yeah, separate. Yeah, separated from God. Because it is. It is separated from God. There is no godly inspiration.
He's not embracing
that. In that goddamn book. No. So, the next book, according to the Hebrew title, would be Dabarim.
Right.
Words. And yet the Greek title for it is Deuteronomy. You know what Deuteronomy stands for in Greek?
Duo is always two in most of the Latin languages.
Yeah. And the ronomy is based on the Greek word nomos.
Oh, well, that's...
How about second law? That's what it means. Now, how would you go and find the truth if you've got a book that has one law, much less two?
Yeah. Good question.
I mean, that's just how utterly stupid it is to trust such a book. And, of course, you know, half of the Christian New Testament was scribed by a man that in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, God called the plague of death, not through one prophet, but through most of his prophets.
Yes, it is it's all over the place.
So how could you have God's word be presented by someone that God claimed was the plague of death? Or you'd have to be a nutcase. We'd have to be a nutcase even to believe that God inspired Paul, since Paul contradicts God in every possible way. I mean, the God that Paul is speaking for would have to be a schizophrenic, inconsistent, absolutely impotent nincompoop.
Confusing, kind of like the word Babylon.
Yeah, like everything that he said and did doesn't have any merit, that he was completely incapable with his plan to save anyone, so he had to turn to a sexual pervert and despot who was demon-possessed to make it all right. mean, that's basically what you're accepting if you believe Paul.
That's the premise of the book.
That is the premise of the book. So, the thing that caused me to say, you know, I want to find out how we got ourselves in this position was a really simple statement. It's found in Bereshith 6:4. It reads like this. Believe it or not, I can read. I can write, I can read. It just doesn't appear so at the moment. There were, for a limited period of time, the Nephilim, those who prostrate themselves and are stillborn, falling in prayer, battle in status, who were militaristic and thus met with an untimely death, existing in the region in those days, but also those bearing a resemblance to them in a slightly different form for some time thereafter. By association, the sons of the Almighty came to, making a habit of pursuing the daughters of man. And they conceived children for themselves. These warriors and politicians, these prominent individuals with the ability to fight who prevailed in their quest for military and political power, who were from a relatively long time ago, are individuals with reputations and recognizable names. Being pretty straightforward, but also extraordinarily insightful. So Guy was talking about a group of people that he referred to by Nephilim. The YM simply makes it plural, so they're the Nephil.
Any of them, right?
Uh-huh. So the Nephil.
Right.
And is Nephil a difficult word to understand the meaning?
No, it's from Nephal. And is all those things that you said are actually found in any cross section of lexicons you want to look, because I looked through the whole thing, and it's Nephilim, and Nephal is based on Nephal, and it mentions every one of those things. It also, I found bully and tyrant.
Yeah.
You know, and just about anything you want to apply that you would apply to political power, dictators, kings, and religious leaders.
Yeah,
there are no giants. I mean, you know that.
But yes, but the term, the term absolutely does not mean large person or giants. I mean, it's if you were to change, and that's what virtually every early translation from the Septuagint to the Vulgate, and the Septuagint and the Vulgate was all there was really all the way up into the 14th century, late 14th century, when Wycliffe made an attempt to translate the Vulgate out of Latin into Anglo-Saxon, but even then he did the Christian New Testament. And so, you know, you get into the 15th century, 1,500 years after Eosha, and the time that this is describing is 4,000 BCE, so 5,500 years later, before you have an English translation. But, you know, sometimes it's hard. Hard by meaning it takes a lot of time. You really got to work at it to look at the roots and meaning of a word. But Nephil? There's only one word, Nephil. And not only is there one word, you hit the gold mine, because the one word is a verb. And in Hebrew, verbs, the actionable word defines the noun, just across the board.
Right.
So what you have is people who prostrate themselves in prayer and who are stillborn, falling in prayer, falling in battle, falling in status, who are militaristic and met with an untimely death.
You lost west away.
And so what I wanted to find is how in the world, although it seemed pretty obvious to me, instinctively, I've done this enough that that as I was translating this and considering all of the English Bible translations to the contrary, instantly I knew that some idiot, many thousand, well, now about probably 2,200 years ago, was trying to create a Greek translation of the Hebrew Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and he came across Nephilim, and he didn't have a clue what it was. So he said, take a stab. Let's see, it's talking about, you know, the sons of God and, you know, the daughters of men. And, oh, my goodness. Why don't we, I got it. I'm going to write down giants. No one's, who's going to know? Right? That's what happened.
Well, but you go down a couple of words later and you get Gabor, which describes these mighty men.
Yeah, then you're thinking.
They say, well, wait a minute. It's telling you right what that word means down here.
Yeah. He tells you what the word means in the conclusion of the sentence. And the next sentence, Bereshit 6:5, is a vivid depiction of exactly who the Nephilim are. But, you know, if you're doing that, you're having to go to the trouble of
reading,
you know, viewing something in context. That wasn't the purpose of a scribe. You know, it's like these idiots that can recite the Quran. Because that's not they weren't paid to be smart. They weren't paid to be thoughtful. They weren't even paid to be accurate. They were only paid to do what they were asked to do, which was to create a copy in the language that somebody wanted it in.
Okay, so it's like the modern American.
It's like the guys that memorize the Quran and haven't got a clue what it says. Yeah. There you go. So as you look at this, you have to wonder, well, how it happened. And immediately I came to the conclusion that it was in the Septuagint. The Vulgate replaced the Septuagint when it was copied from the old Latin copies were merged together. With a guy that did read Greek, we're just basically parodying the Septuagint because the guys that wrote the old Latin copies and Jerome for the Vulgate, they weren't Hebrew scholars. They didn't even have Hebrew manuscripts available to them. So, first guy makes the mistake. They're copyists. They just copied the mistake. And that's what ultimately happened with every English Bible translation, because the Septuagint wrote giants, the Vulgate has giants. They're both wrong. And then when Wycliffe translated it into Anglo-Saxon, he was translating the Vulgate. He translated giants. And when you had the five English translations that followed it leading up to the King James, they all were revisions. They were copyists, if you will. We call it plagiarizing today.
Mm-hmm.
But they just simply revised the prior English translation, having no access to the Hebrew, but occasionally looking at the Greek. But they didn't even have decent copies of the Septuagint much. So they were simply revising translations out of the Latin, and therefore every one of them was wrong. Every one of them had giants. And I think it's very similar to... how did we get into the mess of having Eve? Eve is a Greek name.
Yeah, and worse is a sun goddess.
Yeah. Eve is a Greek name, and so if you were to read virtually every English translation, you're going to see Eve. You read the Septuagint, you see Eve. You read the Vulgate, you see Eve. And so we get into a position where Christians think, well, you know, my Bible is correct because they all read similarly. Well, they're all similarly wrong.
Yeah, therefore, if everybody agrees, it must be the truth.
Right. The name that is called Eve in the Christian Bible is Chawa.
Yeah.
Eve is a Greek name. Chawa is a Hebrew name. Chawa is a Hebrew name. It's a really important Hebrew name. Yeah. It's based on Chaya. It means, you know, life. So it's... And what's interesting, of course, is that Adam, when he chooses the name for his wife, explains the name. Because she's a source of life.
Right.
And he explains the name. He says, I'm going to give her the name Chawa because it's based on Chaya, which is source of life. And it's actually the same word that English Bibles are consistently write as bow down and worship. Chaya, meaning, because it's not just, it's chaya, it would be the Hebrew word for life, but it's also the Hebrew word for to make a declaration, to make a statement, to affirm a declaration on life would be the meaning of her name. Because Chawa is actually a blend of Hebrew words. So you look at this stuff and say, how in the world do you explain every English Bible being wrong with Nephilim, changing it to giants, or wrong with Eve as opposed to Chawa?
Well,
unless they're just copying one another. The first one made a mistake, and since then, none of them bothered to correct it.
Well, you wrote years ago that, you know, that a lot of this is because the stuff there, the familiar sells.
Mm-hmm.
You can't afford to change it, because you do, and then nobody will buy your book, and they're absolutely out of money, so they don't.
Does Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy having a swoosh on their shirt and on their cap, does it tell you anything about the Nike brand in terms of how the shoes are made, how the clubs are crafted? Does it do anything other than just make you familiar with the Nike logo? Yeah.
Well, I'm sure the sweatshop owner just says, just do it.
So. There you go, Scott.
You're old school, remember that.
When Coca-Cola does a commercial and they have people whistling and singing and occasionally holding up a Coke, are they telling you that the Coke really tastes good, or are they just trying to keep that logo in your presence?
It's symbol.
They want it familiar.
All right.
Yeah, familiarity is what sells. And as it relates to Bible translations, if somebody, for example, when the Queen Elizabeth chafed against the Geneva Bible, because the Geneva Bible had footnotes that said this whole idea that kings have a divine right to rule is rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's really tough if you want to be a king or a queen. So she had what's called the Bishop's Bible penned, and it got rid of those dastardly marginal notes. But the Bishop's Bible is almost word for word the Geneva Bible. It just doesn't have the marginal notes.
Yeah.
And then when King Iams, King James, came into power and realized, gosh darn, that Bishop's Bible didn't get any traction. No one's reading it. I mean, we didn't even sell 1,000 copies of it. Now what are we going to do? The Geneva Bible is still whooping us, and it says that kings don't have any right to rule. And, hey, man, I got a problem here. And so he created the King James. You know, there's a 95% overlap between the King James, the Bishop Bible, and the Geneva Bible. 95%
overlap.
95% overlap?
That makes sense.
Yeah. So why would they have a 95% overlap? Because familiarity sells.
Yeah.
You know, if the New American Standard Bible, the NIV were to come up with an accurate translation of the Hebrew, it would be so different than what people are accustomed to. There wouldn't be a pastor in the world who was schooled on, you know, the previous translation that would say, I would recommend this for my congregation, because it's inconsistent with what they have embraced. And so that's the problem.
Yeah,
that's why they all copy each other.
Often. If go back to Nephilim just for a second. It took me 20 minutes because I'm slow. It would take most of an average person probably 12, 15 minutes to do it. I looked up Nephilim and got the same results that you did.
Mm-hmm.
It says go to Nephal.
Mm-hmm.
I got the same results you did, even more so.
Mm-hmm.
I got to, that takes you to Nephel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is these are all Christian publication lexicons.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, in the Nephel, it talks about the miscarriage. That's why you had stillborn.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to Mephel, and which becomes worthless to bow down. People like that. And then we go to Menephel, which is ruin, pile of rubbish, human waste.
Right.
Then you go down to another variation of that slightly, which says ruin, crashing down in a human carcass. Now, interestingly enough, so that covers everything you had, plus I found some more.
Mm-hmm.
you go into one, you just this just kind of was funny.
By the way, that, if you put all those things together, it means they were acting religious by bowing down, and that by bowing down and acting religious, they were prone to fighting wars, which caused them to fall in wars, caused them to fall in status because God won't have anything to do with religious people, and because they promoted this as their patriotic duty, their children were stillborn.
Right. You just kill the whole family.
Right.
Interestingly, though, this was what was funny. Right below the word, because I've been going, as you suggested, keep going.
Right, keep going, right.
And the Mephal, right, the same part of the Mephal, there's a short version, which is a PH lamb and a G, PLG. And that's that means the land is divided by rivers.
That's not good.
Instantly, I think you.
That's not good.
The modern Nephals.
Wow, that's not good.
I didn't prove anything, but I thought it was just hilarious.
Yeah, one of about 20 adjectives that Yahweh uses to describe America in Yeshaya Isaiah 18. And I mean, there is no question he's talking about America. But one of them is it's a land divided by rivers. And so when you when you read that word, that would give you great consternation, because we are the living embodiment of that word today. That's why it says in the text, and people like them for some time thereafter. I mean, the next line is, there would be people like them, similar to them, for some time thereafter.
Right.
Yeah. Read the Babylonians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Roman Catholic Church, and today's incarnation of those things, the Americans.
Yeah, Americans have a way of stopping right about the Ottoman Empire or the British Empire. They stop before the British Empire, and then they just think everything is hunky-dory after that.
Yeah. So here we talked a little bit about Jerome, and this is what he wrote to his pope. We talked about this in our last program. He says, if we are to pen our faith on the Latin text, not the Hebrew text, on the Latin text. Why was it the Latin text? Because it was the Roman Catholic Church. It is for our opponents to tell us which. What he's saying by that is there are so many variations, anybody who was arguing with them would pick the variation that was favorable to them.
Mm-hmm.
For there are almost as many forms of texts as there are copies. What he's identifying here in the Latin is the same thing that already existed in the Greek.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds and hundreds of manuscripts, none of which agree. They're all wildly different. Therefore, this notion, well, I can't believe that God wouldn't protect his holy word. Bull. Bull.
But you have to go to the Hebrew.
Well, that's true. The Hebrew has been pretty well preserved. But the Greek, no. The Latin, no. It's an absolute mess and English translations.
That's the hard news for everybody.
Yeah.
He didn't even care about that stuff.
No, he didn't care about it because he never reveals himself in Greek or Latin. As a matter of fact, he called both Greece and Rome beasts. He goes on to say, if, on the other hand, we are to glean, that means to, glean is an interesting form of harvest. It is a secondary harvest where very little is plucked that is useful. But if we are to glean the truth from a comparison of many, now think about that. What he's saying is if we are to surmise some nuggets of truth here, the only way we can do so is by looking at these wildly divergent texts and choosing the parts that we like.
So usable truth.
Oh, I mean, it's just—I mean, it's just stunning. I mean, it's like if you had 20 guys lined up, and they read 20 different telephone numbers, and you say, you know, we can find glean some nugget of the right number by listening to these 20 people utter different numbers. That's what he's saying here.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to be, at that point, Christianity should have been stillborn. But he's not finished. He had more to say, and we'll finish what he had to say after this break.